are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's happening? Welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Wednesday, May the 8th, and the process looks like it's coming apart. This is your boy Matt Shook, a sports writer here in Detroit City covering the NBA for the Detroit News and the Associated Press, Pistons fan and follower my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thanks for joining us today, and thanks for spreading the word about the podcast throughout the off season. We've got plenty of draft stuff to be addressing later on. We got the biggest Pistons fan in the world contest coming up, free agency, summer league, all sorts of good stuff. Before we hit the doldrums of mid to late July into August, and we'll find some things to keep us occupied and keep us sane throughout the NBA lull that is the late summer. We love the summer, but we don't like the NBA missing from our lives in the late summer, although maybe we need some time away from each other in that interim as well. Today, we are going to run down Tuesday's games throughout the NBA. Also going to talk about the biggest Pistons fan in the world contest, and I'm going to explain to you why the process's flaws are showing a little bit here with the Philadelphia 76ers, but also maybe needle some of our favorite Pistons fans out there as well. But a dud night on Wednesday night in the NBA, by the way. Toronto killed Philadelphia 125-89, 36-point blowout, the biggest of the postseason, so Pistons fans can celebrate that they no longer have the biggest, most wide margin of a loss that the Pistons had in Game 1 against Milwaukee earlier this playoff season. Now, I say that in jest. If you're a Pistons fan, do not act like this is some kind of accomplishment for the Detroit Pistons, that they are no longer the biggest single-game whipping boy of the postseason. And by the way, final scores are basically whatever. The Pistons were thoroughly dominated for 48 minutes in Milwaukee in Game 1, and we know they didn't have Blake Griffin in that one, but clearly that wasn't going to make much of a difference on that night. This wasn't as bad on Wednesday, or Tuesday night for Philly against Toronto on the road. I feel like they were in a lot of this game by, 10, 15 points, and then it just kind of got away at the end. Don't be that Pistons fan. That's really sad. We need to have better standards than that, that kind of trash talks Philly because of what they did. However, I'll point out a little bit later on why some of this is a little bit symptomatic of what they did and why some of these things that are kind of rearing their ugly head are in large part because of the process. Now, by the way, 21 points, 13 rebounds, and 11 assists from Kawhi Leonard in this one. 25 points for Pascal Siakam. He's having another strong run here in the postseason like he did throughout the regular season. And Denver also in Game 5 takes a big 3-2 series lead at home against Portland, 124-98. 25 points, 19 rebounds, and 6 assists for Nikola Jokic in that one. The breakout star of the NBA playoffs. Really, the same guys who had outstanding regular seasons in terms of breakouts are really stepping up and showing their worth in the postseason, talking about guys like Siakam and Jokic and Dame Lillard as well. Although the Dame Lillard stands out there, we'll argue that it's not much of a breakout. He's been doing this for a while. We just haven't really noticed, and they're probably right to some extent there. 24 points for Paul Millsap in the win there, of virtuoso performance from the Denver Nuggets at home. Meanwhile, a guy who wants to forget about this night is C.J. McCollum. He really struggled, 5 of 16. Obviously, the Blazers, with only two real go-to scorers, need more from him on a night-in, night-out basis. No breaking news there. And again, I really like Dame Lillard, and I like McCollum as well. But if your best players are just backcourt guys that are kind of taking turns offensively, certainly that's going to work a lot of nights, especially when a guy like Dame Lillard is driving the ship for you guys. But I don't know what the ceiling for that kind of team is. And I know it seems a little ironic because the Pistons once upon a time had two of their best scorers in the guard positions and won two championships there and competed for more championships during the Bad Boys run with Isaiah Thomas and Joe Dumars. But obviously the hallmark of that team was the defense, just like the 2004 championship team. And the offenses were very good, and especially with the Bad Boys, probably just good, I would say, with the 2004 Pistons, some lulls in there. But the offense was the secondary part of those teams. I think we can all agree that the defenses were the reason that those teams were able to be so successful. And that was a different NBA, maybe an NBA right now where you can't build a defensive first team that could be a championship contender, a championship winning team. Obviously, every team needs to be good enough defensively to make it happen, but a little bit more of a different era. But with Portland, you know, more cohesion is needed, more of a two-man game between your two best offensive players, whether it's a guard and a wing or maybe a guard and a big. So I still think, you know, Portland could be in a nice position, maybe better position this summer to make a big trade. Looking at CJ McCollum's value, it's at a level right now where they might be comfortable doing it as opposed to last year. You have that balancing act of the organization, right? You get swept in the first round last year. Everyone is whispering that maybe you should blow it up. But guess what? Nobody wants your players after coming off of that stink in this short-term vision and short-term memory that everyone has in fandom and also NBA front offices as well. Now that you made a nice run, you were the toast of the league for a couple weeks there, you can get value for the guys. And again, I'm not suggesting you trade Dame Lillard. He's your franchise player. Certainly, you're always open to making whatever kind of trade. But thinking more specifically about CJ McCollum and the core makeup of the Portland roster, I think we're plainly seeing maybe a bit of a ceiling. Although maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit too, because maybe, you know, KD leaves the Warriors, Chris Paul gets older and hurts the Houston flexibility of that team going forward. And maybe a world exists where Portland can kind of stay the course and in a de facto way move closer to the top of that conference. And teams like Oklahoma City that I've talked about possibly might be thinking of a trade, they might be thinking that way too, kind of stay the course. Because we know there's something to be said for cohesions with the main groups of players and makeups of rosters as well. So, but some interesting off seasons ahead for some of these teams. Now tonight, you know, looking back, first of all, you had two game fives there, and I think that a lot of people in the media and maybe analysts on TV, all that happened last night is those home teams held serve. Now, we don't want to bury teams that are just down 3-2 and say that Ben Simmons is the worst player in the world and Philly needs to pack it up, the process sucks, and that Portland needs to make these huge changes. Now, I realize the irony in that I just discussed that possibility, but I'm not here to say that overall. I'm not here to bury these teams. First of all, I need game sevens. So come on, those losing teams, come on, go home and hold serve. I'm going to be in Vegas this Sunday. Would love nothing more. The opportunity is still there for three game sevens. I will accept one, would love two, and obviously three would be quite a treat for me on Mother's Day out in Las Vegas, celebrating not with my mother, but celebrating hopefully some NBA basketball in game sevens. Now we got Celtics and Bucks tonight, 8 p.m. on TNT. I don't think it's overreacting to say that in actuality, I think the Celtics are buried in this one. I know they were my preseason pick to win the NBA championship, and it hurts my heart to admit that I'm going to be wrong, probably starting tonight. Milwaukee, 8.5-point favorites to close out that one. I'm not burying the 3-2 teams yet, but Boston, 3-1. Looked like a dead man walking right there. In addition, Malcolm Brogdon's supposed to come back there. I think he'll get limited minutes. I don't think this will make a huge impact on tonight's game, but it's pretty smart for Milwaukee if he's ready to kind of get his feet wet in a kind of what is seems silly, but a little bit of a meaningless game for Milwaukee tonight, even if they do have to go back to Boston for game six. And I think they could stumble a little bit tonight and still get the victory at home against Boston, playing poorly for parts of this game and still getting the win. I expect them to kind of roll in this one, go on a run, and bury Boston tonight. But and if you can get Malcolm Brogdon to be ready to contribute in a meaningful way in the East Finals, and by getting him, you know, back to the rhythm of being in a game, I think that could really help them starting tonight. And also Game 5, as we know, Rockets and Warriors back in Oakland tonight on TNT. Hey, who knows? Maybe this is the last game at Oracle Arena ever, right? The last Warriors game. If they lose Game 5 and then lose Game 6 in Houston, I'm not predicting that. But this is the case. This is where we're at right now. Could be the last game in Oracle Arena history. Warriors, 6-point favorites in that one tonight. I'll be watching this whole game, but you can't make me like it. I will watch. You cannot make me like it. But up next, we're going to talk about the process. Go back to Philly. A little bit of Pistons, Philly rivalry on Twitter. I roll my eyes a little bit, but I'm going to talk about why these flaws are showing up now for Philly and what this means systematically. This isn't something that popped up overnight, and what that shows about the process that this team might be heading towards another painful end to their season. But you can get the Locked On Pistons podcast on the brand new podcasting app Himalaya, as well as Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. And when you get in your car, go ahead and tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Pistons.
Yes, sir!
little bit later on, I will give the details of the biggest Pistons fan in the world contest and update you guys on where we're at there, passing along the details on how you enter as well. But as we know, Philly is in trouble. The process down 3-2 now to the Toronto Raptors in the Eastern Conference semifinals. That series continues on Thursday night with Game 6 back in Philly. Now, all they got to do is go home and win, and then you got Game 7. Anything can happen there, as we know, and I'm rooting for them in Game 6. I want that Game 7, so bring it on. But after the loss, the 35-point embarrassing loss for Philly last night, a lot of Pistons Twitter is out there saying that this proves the process is wrong, and it's a little silly. And this kind of falls under the category of reactionary Twitter to one night of the NBA playoffs. It's kind of a little bit of a cancer, and we all fall into it sometimes. And obviously, you know, we do a daily podcast here on the Locked On Pistons show, so I'm sure you could cut up some clips that would make me look silly here and there, and hypocritical in some ways too. But it is what it is, and we're here right now. But my main point today is that what we're seeing from Philly is symptomatic of what they did. These aren't isolated things that are unlucky or something like that. First off, Joel Embiid, all the ailments, all the physical issues. Well, first off, why did he fall to them at number 3 in 2014? Why did the most talented player, the one with the highest ceiling, fall to number 3 in 2014? Because he had the injuries. He had the broken foot. Andrew Wiggins and Jabari Parker, there was not a world that anyone thought that those guys had higher ceilings than Joel Embiid, but those guys went ahead of him because he had the foot issue. And that's also what made him a perfect pick for the process at the time. They knew he probably wasn't going to play in year one, and it turned out to be that he didn't play in year two as well. So this was perfect. The Sixers could keep losing and getting another high draft pick the next year. They had this ace in the hole of Joel Embiid sitting there who could be good. Well, guess what? The same injuries that made him available to you, the same injuries that made him the perfect piece for what you're trying to do, they're really showing themselves at the bad times. He's obviously a guy who has physical issues, whether it's the sicknesses he has, the injuries he has, and we could go on all day about Joel Embiid and what this means about him and his future and what type of career he's going to have if this is the five or six ailments that he has throughout a single playoff series at the time when you need him the most, what that says about him. But I think we can all agree that the reasons that he worked out well for the process, the reasons that he was that guy that worked out for them and fell to them, are the same reasons why it's not coming together right now at the most important time in the spring when he's needed by his team. You could say a little bit of the same things for Ben Simmons, although the injury issues aren't the thing with him right now, but he misses that first season with the broken foot. And again, it's not injury concerns with Ben right now, but it's a one lost year of player development. He didn't get a chance to work. So the reasons that he became sexy to you at that number one pick are all the same reasons why are some of the same reasons why it's not working out for him. Now, this part might sound silly, but I think that there's an issue with Philly with having too much of that young, raw talent on this team. And I think we'd all agree that looking at this rosters, Philly, especially the top five, but I think even from top to bottom, I think the 76ers have the most talent in the Eastern Conference right now. And we know that talent wins. Well, guys don't have roles on this team right now. For instance, you got a scorer in Tobias Harris who isn't really scoring enough and not really contributing anything out there. These are the types of guys that you get in the lottery and before. And I know Tobias Harris wasn't picked by the 76ers, but he's the type of player that they selected and ended up getting because of the process, because of the chips that they had. There's no glue guys on this team. There's no picks that you would have made in the middle of the first round or savvy free agent signings that you could have made along the way. The Pistons could use a blue chipper, no doubt, but they could also get a nice role guy at number 15 who fits in. And instead of swinging and missing with a star early in the draft, or maybe lucking, quote-unquote, into a Joel Embiid who brings along all sorts of problems, sometimes it's not that bad to find a guy who you really like, who you know you won't have to make a $120 million contract decision on in year four before you even know what your team is and should be going forward. In that case, a player like that, that mid-range guy who's going to be a nice fourth or fifth piece for your team, in some cases that's going to be very valuable and something that I believe the Sixers fans could use right now. And I think that they would agree that they would be a little bit better than having, you know, this question going forward of Ben Simmons or Joel Embiid. Maybe you have to trade Ben Simmons this offseason to maximize whatever your team's roster is going to be going forward. These are the types of decisions that you have to make in year four or year five of the post-process era when you're really not ready to make them. Which one of these guys are you going to commit to? You have these high draft picks. You have these three or four guys that are supposed to be the foundations of your organization. Now, you got to make big decisions based on how the salary cap works in the NBA, what you're going to do with this team going forward. That's a product of the process. That's not independent of the process. That's not unlucky. These are things that you set up. These are things that are baked in to whatever you're doing. When you're, by the way, embarrassing yourself for 5 years so that you can have these problems 3 to 4 years down the line of when your process starts to show some of its fruits of some successes. Now, along those lines, let's talk about the coach. Brett Brown, you're wasting a year with him right now, and I think the window is closing at least a little bit on this team, and now you're just going to fire the coach and move forward. I think that's obviously, if things go according to how they're going right now, they lose game six or possibly game seven in Toronto. Brett Brown probably loses his job. And then, and I don't even think this is necessarily his fault. I don't know if he's a good coach, and I think that the media and a lot of the stars in the league kind of fall back on this crutch of, well, we don't have a good coach, so I'm scapegoated. I'm not to blame for any of these problems, and I think there's a million media people out there that overvalue the idea of a coach. But I think it's obviously important to have the team believing that you have a good coach, and I think that's part of the magic of a Phil Jackson, and at least some of the magic of Greg Popovich as well, that their reputations are so strong that they're create some stability around the team, and that there's one less big excuse for players to fall back on. And I don't think Philly lost by 35. I know that Philly didn't lose by 35 or 36 because Brett Brown can't coach. I think that's players. But you put some poor coach like Brett Brown in a situation where he's a loser for years. He's tabbed this developmental coach, doesn't matter what the win-loss record is, and we all laud him at times for that. But now when you start to needing to win, when things start going wrong in the middle of a playoff series, now he doesn't have the reputation that he needs to have for that spring victories. He's that loser that kind of pulled us through this time when we didn't really need to win anyway. And now your prima donna stars of these top five picks, they don't want to listen. So now you have to fire him. You probably hire the retread coach du jour, who is probably only available because he's not that great of a coach, and then you hope that guy can take it to the next level. Who wants to deal with this team? I mean, I know that you'll be able to find a coach. You'll throw some money at somebody, but I think it's going to be more of the second, third-level coaches who's kind of been around, has that respect. But I don't know that that's a guy that's going to be able to take you from where they're at now to where they're at going forward. I think it's going to be kind of a headache for some coach out there. And I think that this is a team that doesn't know how to handle success. I think the guys were allowed to lose and lose badly for the first parts of their career. They all develop kind of at the same times. You make that trade for Jimmy Butler. Now you've got kind of all these guys that are looking for that first big contract, or Jimmy Butler is in his expiring year this year. You've kind of got all these different agendas for a roster that weren't built in a natural way, that didn't follow the pecking order of what their roles should be in kind of a more natural way, as the team kind of made this maybe slower but more defined and better ascent, more natural and more organic ascent as a roster and as a franchise. I think you have all these mismatched pieces who didn't go through the process, pardon the pun, of all the gradual ascent, and now they kind of don't know what to do. And again, I'll reiterate, this is not an indictment of a rebuild. I know what a rebuild is. It's not the same as the process. But to kind of recap, again, the Pistons-Philly debate is not a debate. You'd rather be Philly right now than the Pistons. But I don't think it's a time, especially in the middle of a playoff series, when they're in round two, they're deep into a playoff series with a supposed contender in Toronto. This is not the time for Pistons fans to do a touchdown dance. You kind of look a little bit silly. But the process itself, some of these strategies of tank, embarrassingly for years and years, which is the 97.1 sports radio caller idea of the century, where Sam Hinkie did it, and you can get two or three guys that could make all-star games down the line. You're seeing some of these flaws. They're showing themselves in real ways. This isn't unlucky. This isn't things that were out of the control of the Philadelphia 76ers and their front office over the years. But I think that because of the way that they constructed it, you invited these types of problems. So it's not a complete ridiculous idea. There's obviously things that go right with the process, or could go right with the process with some of these high picks. But you are inviting some of these problems that you're seeing in round two with the Philadelphia 76ers. And I don't think these are things that go away real easily. And I don't think these are things that are going to be easy to solve with this summer and this front office and what they're going to do going forward. Not just this summer, but summers going forward while the clock's ticking on a guy like Joel Embiid, while the fit is never going to be quite right with Ben Simmons, and while you got to figure out your coaching situation going forward. But remember, to get this show every day, subscribe to Locked On Pistons on the new Himalaya podcast app. In an ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlists and new features every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to the Locked On Pistons podcast. Up next, we're going to give you the details for the biggest Pistons fan in the world contest. That is coming up here on the Locked On Pistons podcast, which is a proud member of the Locked On Network, your team every day. And hey, we are still looking for the biggest Pistons fan in the world. The contest is going to be a single elimination tournament of trivia. We're going to go one-on-one on a phone call up against another Pistons fan. I'm going to ask some trivia questions. First one to answer it wins. We're going to go best of five in each of these series. So five questions, and whoever gets the first to three is going to move on. And then maybe in the second round, we'll go just like the NBA. Go four out of seven, kind of move to the seven-game series. I know that they're all seven-game series, but in the interest of saving some trivia questions going forward, we'll start with a best of five in the first round. Should be fun. Here's how to enter. It's free. Just send me an email at matt_shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, and that's at yahoo.com. Again, matt_shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com. Give me your first and last name, where you live. And I'm also going to need you to send me trivia questions. I've come up with a bunch on my own. I've had some great listeners send in some too. But send in some trivia questions about the Pistons and include the answers in there too. And obviously, I will not use the ones that you send in for your tournament matchups. But please do me a favor and do not share publicly or even with some of your buddies who might be entering the contest as well. Don't let them give a heads up on what questions that you sent in, so that you have a leg up because you know some of the questions that might be used. Please don't do that. A little bit of an honor system. I know Detroit sports fans and Detroit Pistons fans will follow those directives. I'm confident in that. No one's going to game the system like you would maybe in some other fan bases or less honest people or something like that. We got good Midwest people that are going to do the right thing with Detroit sports fans and some of you guys around the world who are also Pistons fans. We got a good number of applicants so far. Going to have a tournament style, probably going to end up with some buys as well. And extending the deadline through the weekend, I'm going to Las Vegas. And maybe this contest will start probably sometime next week. So those of you who emailed in already, you should have heard from me already with just kind of a, hey, we got you, we'll get you in, you'll hear from me soon kind of email. And then we'll start it up next week and we'll get going and we'll put the bracket together. And we'll do it. So these rounds aren't going to be every day. We'll just kind of fill it in when we got some time on the podcast. So that's what it is. Then we're going to find the biggest Pistons fan in the world here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. Again, the email address, and that's the only way to enter, matt_shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com. Send in some trivia questions. Also give me an idea of when throughout the course of a normal week you might be available to jump on the phone for 5-10 minutes and to do your rounds from there. So that's how to do that. If you got any other questions, just email me or get in touch with me on social media. I should be able to answer those as well. Winner gets a Locked On Pistons podcast t-shirt, and maybe we'll dig up something else fun Pistons related as well. But this is your host, Matt Shook of the Locked On Pistons podcast, saying thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Have a good one, everyone.